Hello and welcome back to the history of video games. My name is Ben. I'm joined by the one and only Wes. How are you doing today, Wes?
I am doing great, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm just excited to be back to podcasting because we had to take a while to get our research done, and now it's all done.
We're on a roll. Good.
Yeah.
Time to get into 1983, but you know, before we do that, we always got to talk about what we've been playing recently. I know you've got some antics going on in Skyrim. Is that what you want to talk about today? Or
no, I think I want to see if I can beat the game.
Okay.
So that might be a couple of weeks. I don't know. Or if I feel like I have just like a lot to say, maybe.
Right. Yeah.
But I figured I'd talk about something else that I was dipping my toes into a little bit.
Okay.
There's been a couple games in my wish list that I just keep going back to checking. They all like released in a bad state, you know, and I'm like, is it good yet? Like one of them's definitely City Skylines 2, and
right.
It feels pretty much at this point is never going to get good.
Oh, like, no.
That's what I am seeing, you know. The new Microsoft Flight Simulator, another one. It's still mixed reviews, I think. But there is one that has pulled itself out of the gutter. And that has been Planet Coaster 2. And it went on sale a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I kind of want to pick it up. Even though I just played Planet Zoo not that long ago, and it kept crashing, like, terribly.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't know. I was like, I want to roll the dice with this. It was pretty cheap. It was, like, on sale, and they were just pushing, like, a new DLC or something. So I picked up Planet Coaster 2, and I'm very happy to say it has not crashed on me yet.
Nice.
My park's a lot smaller than the zoo was, but I'm pretty happy with the performance so far, and I've just been really liking it, man. There's been some growing pains with like the system changes, you know. I kind of just in my head, I'm like, this is probably going to play exactly like Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, you know, or like the classic from way back when. And it's different when, you know, there's like, oh, to increase security, don't just hire a security guard, but put down cameras. I'm like, oh. The cameras are more than just aesthetic. I didn't realize.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? Just some things like that. But honestly, I'm loving it. This whole, like, why they have a Planet Coaster 2 when Planet Coaster 1 exists is because they added, like, water parks. And I've only really scratched the surface with them. I have, like, one big pool in my park. But I've mainly just been landscaping. I feel like that's what you do a lot in these games. My park is, like, I made it inside of a cave, and I was like, well, this is pretty cool, but it obviously makes it kind of hard to move around sometimes.
Right.
It's pretty easy to like see what you need to do in order to win. When I was playing Planet Zoo, I remember having a hard time at the beginning, like trying to make money, you know, and this time I was a little bit more careful about not going into massive debt immediately and making sure my guests are happy. Cause that's a real core thing. It's just making sure you have a decent park rating. And to do that, especially in the beginning, your guests need to be happy. But now I'm kind of in a place where I'm just kind of making money in the background while I'm doing other things. And all of a sudden, when I'm ready to put down a new coaster, I have the funds for it. So, yeah, I really like it. It's still like annoying making paths and sometimes and stuff. But overall, I think it's a massive upgrade from the last two Planet Coaster or Planet Zoo type games I've played, just because it seems stable. And it's been working all right.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, that's really all you can ask for when you were saying with Planet Zoo that you enjoyed the game. It's just like, could not do what it was supposed to be doing. Like, yeah.
I really pushed the limits of like how big I made that park and how many animals were in it, right? There's like hundreds of animals. And with no NPCs as like the main things that you're putting in. Like, I've got a decent sized park, but there's probably only 10 rides. You know, I think it doesn't have to compute as much.
Right.
So yeah. That helps.
Cool. Sounds a lot of fun. That's good to know because it's been a long time since I've played a park tycoon kind of game. Could be fun to get back into another. So
yeah.
Might take you at that recommendation next time it hops on sale.
Yeah, definitely. There's even a couple DLCs out for it. The latest one is like a sorcery pack, so you can make like a Harry Potter Hogwarts world if you want. So
that's pretty cool. Okay.
My favorite part of all the decorations are always these animatronics, right? that you can put in, just like some cowboys like gunning each other down, you know, like animatronic robots. So you have one that I love that was like, a pirate band on a stage, and one guy was like playing the spoons or something, you know what I mean? It was pretty awesome. Yeah. So they're always good. But yeah, they have a couple wizard ones where they're kind of like doing some spells and stuff as a decorations. Yeah. So that's what I've been up to. I've been diving into it every now and then, and I'm still planning on doing more. So yeah, it's a good one. But what have you been up to, Wes? Anything interesting?
Well, you know, I've still been trying to beat Silk Song. But other than that, the hype has been getting real for the new Pokemon game that's coming out on the Switch, Pokemon Legends ZA. And I'm really excited for it. It takes place in this city that was first introduced in Gen 6, Pokemon X and Y. And so a while ago, like maybe a year ago at this point, I had started a playthrough of Pokemon X because I'd never played it before. So I thought, I've got a little bit of time before the game comes out. Maybe I'll play that a little bit more, familiarize myself with Gen 6. And it's a pretty fun game. But man, I remember, and I forget if I ever mentioned this on the podcast, but when I first started playing it, I have an emulator for it. And I thought the emulator just, like, something was wrong, because it was like every now and then, like, cutscenes and stuff would go down to like literally like 2 frames a second.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, the first or one of the first Pokemon games on the 3DS instead of the DS. And I guess it's just how the game ran. Like, it did not run well when it originally came out. So the emulator, I don't know, might be messing things up a bit, but it's just kind of janky. It is pretty cool, though. I'd never touched a 3DS before. I'd never really gotten to the handheld side, my Game Boy Color, and then went straight to PC and other consoles.
Mm-hmm.
But the 3DS has some pretty cool visuals, and it's really interesting seeing how similar the Pokemon models are in X to what they are now, just like updated with better textures, basically. And I think I've seen people say that since that was like the first game that they had to like 3D model all these Pokemon, like a lot of those models are still like based on those.
Yeah.
So hopefully it'll give them a refresh sometime. I think they have along the way, but I'm still not very far in that game. It does kind of like the Resident Evil, I guess, sort of thing, where the camera angles just automatically rotate when you go to different places, and sometimes they're just really bad and disorienting. But you know, it's a fun Pokemon game, and ZA I'm really excited for because it's new, so it's got a lot of fun new stuff in it, new mega evolutions, which are a whole thing that I've never really played a game that has mega evolutions in it before. But also they're doing away with the turn-based fighting system in this game.
Oh, doing like a real-time?
Yes.
Type thing?
Yeah.
Shoot, what was that big game that just came out that kind of did that?
A little bit like Clair Obscura.
Yeah.
Or Clair Obscura 33. Or what is it? Clair Obscura Expedition 33. Very confusing title. But yeah, a little bit like that. A little bit like Final Fantasy 13, where it's like real-time, but your attacks are charging up in the background and then you can only use them after they charge up. So it's sort of like turn based, but it's more off of like a, you know, like a speed of your moves kind of component. So it's going to be really interesting. They get to do a bunch of fun stuff in the Pokemon Legends games because they're not main series games. So they don't have as many like expectations to uphold.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's a 3D game now and you're like doing these attacks in real time, you actually have to dodge with your Pokemon and with your trainer, which is a little weird. I don't know why Pokemon are attacking your trainer, but like your trainer can get hit by these attacks too. So you're actually moving around in 3D space. I think the targeting is kind of like automatic, but there are like AoE moves versus single target moves and stuff like that. So I'm really interested to see how it pans out. I'm very tentative about how this game is going to perform on the Switch 1, because of course all of the gameplay they're showing is on Switch 2 for this game to try and sell the Switch 2, but this is, you know, one of the titles that's releasing on both at launch. So we'll have to see. As excited as I am, it's not one that I'm going to pre-order. You know, this is definitely going to be a wait for release and see what the reviews look like kind of game.
Okay.
I'm always bit of a shill for Pokemon, so I'm excited to see how it goes and see, you know, if they get good reception on this new type of gameplay in case they want to work it into any other games in the future.
All right, well that sounds fun. Sorry, when does that come out again?
I don't think I said, but I believe it's October 16th.
So very, very soon.
Like in a couple of days, and I'm going to be on vacation when it comes out, which is good because I won't be like, you know, just like waiting to get it. But as soon as I get back, I'm going to be looking at reviews and might have to pick it up and see how it is.
All right. Sounds good. Let's move into the special topic though, Wes. We have a pretty short one here today, kind of tied into the title of today's episode. We're saying goodbye to the Commodore PET today. And we're never talking about it again and never going back to it again, which
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's our first like really big computer death, I guess we'll say. It was part of the Holy Trinity that came out in 1977. Here we are 6 years later, and it's barely hanging on by a thread. We looked at all the games that came out for it this year, which there was quite a few, but there wasn't a single one that we wanted to even give a honorable mention to. So we thought, okay, it's time to wrap the PET up. And, you know, we're going to be looking at some of the games that came out later for it in the timeline. But I thought maybe before we get there, we can just kind of reminisce about some of our first experiences with the PET. I don't know if you remember any or if you will know any of these games that I'm going to tell you.
We'll
I'm not going to go through too many. I tried to pick just some of the highlights for the whole system and also the games that I thought were a little bit more like PET forward, if you will, because some of the games, they were, you know, released on multiple systems. So I tried to pick ones that were a bit more just PET. But yeah, our first games that we ever reviewed on the system, Wes, it was actually you, and you must have only did extended mentions because you did two of them. One was a game called Lander, which is obviously Lunar Lander.
Sure. Yeah.
We all saw that coming. But then the other one was a game called Baseball by Bob Pelero, which was it was an okay baseball game. For 1977, it was with its
pretty
time.
Decent, yeah.
Yeah. But then as far as like the bigger games that came out on the system, I think the biggest is probably Android NIM. We definitely talked about that and reviewed it at the time. It's just NIM, which is one of the first games you ever played on the podcast. And you know, it's like a mathy type game that you're destined to lose if you play against the computer. But this one was by Leo Christofferson. It had just a really cool sprite work where the androids would kind of like move around and have a bit of a personality, which is very rare on the PET. So I believe that came out first on the PET. It obviously gets ported all around, but was one that when it came out, we looked at it on the PET. So definitely got to mention that one. Another one was called Dungeon of Death by Instant Software. This came out in 1979 and was a PET version of like a D&D type game, kind of similar to the old Play-Doh games, but on a home computer for the masses, which is the first time I think we ever saw that. So wanted to definitely mention that one. We also have a game called Star Force by A-Star Software. This came out on the PET and was a version of Exidy's Starfire back in, I believe, 1979 again. Yeah, just cool to see an arcade game, Starfire, which is a game that you really liked a lot and I liked it as well. But on a home computer, we're starting to see arcade games moving over to the home market, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And then obviously the last thing I really wanted to mention was two games from Cursor Magazine. Cursor Magazine was actually a pretty important magazine for the history of video games and one that we covered a lot back in the day. But some of the ones that we did from Cursor Magazine include the game Fire, which you kind of flew a helicopter and put out fires with your helicopter, which was cool. And then a game called Aliens, which was a shooting game that kind of sped up as you played it. So those were like the main classics, I would say. Obviously there's a lot more, but those are the ones that really stood out to me as being like kind of the best of the PET back in the 1977 to 79 kind of era. Past that, it was really hard to pick because, you know, the PET's kind of going up against the VIC-20 even, or the TRS-80 Coco and stuff. I wanted to mention, kind of looking back on how far we've really come, when the PET was first released, it was released in January of 1977. It released at a price point of $800, which is equivalent to like $4,000 today. Just 3 years later, the VIC-20 releases, also by Commodore. The VIC-20 has twice the ROM, twice the resolution, 16 colors, 4 times the sound channels. And it released at a price point of $300, which is almost four times less. So pretty much like the computing power almost quadrupled in those 3 years and the price was cut by a quarter as well, or by a third. So it's, right. I don't know. It's just kind of crazy to think how far we've come in such a short time and how expensive the PET was when it first released.
Right. Yeah. How expensive those components were, and then how the, it just got so much cheaper as like the, you know, they got better manufacturing methods and everything. Man, I forgot it was that much for the PET.
Yeah. By the way, the PET ran on the MOSTAG 6502 chip. That chip was manufactured at a plant that Wes and I actually visited.
It's
in Pennsylvania. And if you want to check that out, go check our YouTube channel. It's one of the, I think it's the first video on the channel. But yeah, so there's a lot of history with me and the PET, and with you and the PET, I'm sure. It's been a good run. But I'm interested to see, Wes, what do you think the games are going to be like for people making games in 2025 on the Commodore PET? Do you think it's going to still be kind of bad? Well, we'll have to take a look.
I mean, yeah, I think exactly. We've got a little bit of an idea, but we don't want to give you too much of a sneak preview because we're going to talk about these games in our timeline. So why don't we take a quick little break and then talk more about the PET in our timeline. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Let's hop into our timeline today, and we're going to start things off by talking about the Commodore PET as we say farewell to it and see what happened, you know, what came out for this computer after 1983. People are still making games for this. It's a beloved computer, and we wanted to see, you know, if we travel to the future, travel to current day, are people really getting the absolute most that they can out of this computer?
Yeah, and to be fair, like, I don't think when we do get to 2012 or whatever that we're going to come back to the PET. I'm sorry, but like, there's no better time to do these games than right now.
Exactly. Yeah, we didn't want to wait until, you know, 500 years from now when we're still doing podcast episodes, we get to the current day PET stuff, but figured it might as well just mention them all now. So we're going to start off here with Mayhem by Revival Studios, which came out in 2012 for the PET. It's a simple dodging game that I think we may have seen first on the Fairchild, but the frame rate with multiple moving objects on screen is really impressive for the PET.
And then next, we have another one by Revival Studios called Rush, made in 2013 for the Commodore PET. It's a fast-scrolling platformer with parallax scrolling for the Commodore PET.
Yeah.
Flicker-free graphics, decent jumping physics. Yeah, I don't know how they're doing that, but it's pretty cool.
And then we have RPG Quest Mini May, aka Petima, by Robin Harbron. This came out in 2013, and it is a top-down RPG similar to Ultima, but very cool to see this on the Commodore PET.
Next up, this one comes out in 2016. It's called Space Chase by Christian Krenner. The author calls it a game that was 35 years too late, and yeah, he's probably right. But it's a two-player split-screen version of Space War. That was a little hard to follow, if I'm being honest, but I mean, I don't think we've ever seen a split screen game in 1983 so far. So the fact that a computer could even, you know, have like two cameras and two sets of controls, and that computer's the Commodore PET, just kind of blows my mind.
And then we have Attack of the Petsky Robots by 8-Bit Productions in 2021. It's a really nice top-down action adventure game. It uses some perspective with a scrolling play field. Again, very cool to see on this old computer to give it a large playing area and a semi-3D sort of effect.
We've got one called Cheese and Chive, which is an interesting name for a game, but it's by Tenemouth Software. Came out in 2021 for the Commodore PET. And by the way, when I say came out, I don't think it came out in stores. I think this is just like released on a forum somewhere.
Right, you know, right. I mean? Or like a lot of these are on like itch.io and stuff like that. But
yeah. This is basically a Mario game, though. It's a nice platformer with some scrolling graphics and parallax scrolling as well. It ran incredibly smoothly for the PET.
All right, but then we couldn't get through our farewell to the PET without reviewing one of these games from the future, from the current day. So I took a look at Petsky Portal by Jim Orlando, came out in 2021. This game is very cool. Let me first get into the name Petsky. We've mentioned that a couple times. Petsky is the character set that the Commodore PET used, kind of like ASCII characters, but Petsky characters. And Petsky Portal is because this is a Commodore PET version of Valve's classic game Portal. So how the heck are you going to make, you know, thinking in portals on the Commodore PET? We'll see. Jim Orlando made it happen. He's a blogger on Medium.com and a programmer who has made several games on his 40-year-old original Commodore PET. So I don't know if it's still kicking right now, but at least in 2021, he had his original working PET and he programmed games for it, which is pretty sweet. He details in his blog about some of the games that he's made that, you know, he made versions of Defender and like a tower defense type game that when he was coding within the limits of the PET, it was kind of like this unexpectedly fun challenge because it's really satisfying when you can get the program just working better than before because you have to be so economic with your code because typing in code is a pain in the butt on the PET, I think is basically what he was saying.
Okay.
But let me get into the gameplay now. I mean, this is Portal, basically, and it's really impressive. It's exactly what you would think like a 2D version of Portal would be, which I'm sure lots of Flash games came out after Portal came out that did exactly this kind of thing. The levels are very reminiscent of the original game. You know, you have some starting puzzles where you don't have the Portal gun, but you have to place blocks on buttons and use pre-existing portals before eventually they give you the Portal gun and you can make your own portals. You control your character with WASD, and you can jump and move slightly while you're in the air. And you also have a cursor to put down the portals that you control with four other letter keys. But the portals, interestingly, even though your cursor can move anywhere on the screen, the portals still come from your character. So you do need line of sight to shoot the portal against the wall. And there's puzzles around that with an obstacle in the way. So you have to get your character in a certain angle to shoot the portal where you need it to go. There are some areas where you can place portals and some where you can't, just like in the original game. And these are represented by like different wall designs in the actual game. And you're just going through trying to solve puzzles with these portals. So that's basically it. It's not a super complicated game. Let me get into my ratings for this game because it is pretty cool and pretty impressive what Jim Orlando was able to do on this Commodore PET computer. For graphics, I gave it a 2.75 out of 10. Doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're considering that we have monochrome green and black graphics and that's it, it's pretty dang good. He got very creative with the Petsky character set. Your character, the person you're playing as, looks really good, almost like an astronaut with like a circle head, a big block body. The legs have this even sort of like quote unquote animation where normally they're just like a bracket, so it looks like you're like a foot standing still, and then they change into an X whenever you're moving. So it looks like, you know, the feet are running. It's a very clever way to use just like characters to make it look like you're running. When you're slingshotting around the screen with momentum or when you're jumping, everything moves really smoothly across the screen too, which I really appreciate. All the interactables and the different hint text that pop up on the screen make it so that I could just jump into this game and figure out exactly what I needed to do to solve the puzzles. Especially because I'm familiar with Portal, but I definitely think he gives you all the context clues visually that you need to play this. The portals themselves look very simple. It just kind of turns whatever wall you shoot it on into dots instead of blocks, but they communicate what they need to perfectly fine. And I like that at one point in some of the later puzzles, the pi symbol is used to represent bounce pads. So overall, it's still very simple. This is on the Commodore PET, but it communicates everything that it needs to while running really smoothly and looking pretty darn good. So I really liked it. Moving on to sounds, I could only give this a 2 out of 10. I mean, the hardware is, of course, very limited on the Commodore PET, especially with sounds. So it's just a lot of different beeps. But given what he had to work with, I think the sounds are pretty great. The portal sound is a fun little like trill of beeps. And there's also a few other beeps for movement and pressing buttons that all fit in well, but nothing stand out, really. Moving on to gameplay, though, I gave this a 3.25 out of 10. I would have kept playing this game if there was more content for it. But there were 10 levels, and I beat the 10 levels and wanted to play more because I love Portal. I will say the 10 levels only took me like maybe 15 minutes. I think part of that is because some of the puzzles he used were very similar to puzzles from the original game, which is impressive. I'm not saying that's a bad thing he copied them. I think it's cool that they're like directly represented in this PET version of it. But yeah, it's very faithful to the original. The control system takes a bit of getting used to, moving the cursor and all that, and with buttons kind of makes things a bit slow. But I felt like all of the levels could be completed without the controls getting in the way. I also love that, you know, your character can gain momentum based on how high you jump off of something and fall into a portal on the ground, which is exactly how it works in the original Portal. And it even has the one puzzle where you have to set up an infinite loop where you're falling through the floor, then falling out the ceiling, and then time when you shoot a portal off of a, you know, diagonal surface so that you can launch yourself really far with that momentum. I just think it's so cool that all those like physics work in this game, you know, that he programmed that in here and that it works in on the Commodore PET. We've definitely seen physics before on the PET, but it just worked really well. And never for a second did I think like, oh, this is a bad Portal game. It just made sense and played really well. For relevance, this is kind of hard to give a relevance rating to because it came out in 2021. So I'm just going to land on a 5 out of 10 for it. I love that it exists, and it's really cool to see what can be done on the PET today. And so overall, that left me with a 2.75 out of 10 for Petsky Portal. I think it is a great farewell to the Commodore PET. It showcases that it had potential and could definitely support great games with some creativity, but it was still definitely an underpowered computer. It kind of makes me have a bit of a nostalgia for that green and black screen. So it was really nice to see like a modern game on this system.
Yeah, very cool. I wonder if anybody out there listening now could eventually make that 3 out of 10 game for the PET.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, this one was like right there, just on the cusp. I feel like it was really the sounds that was holding it back.
True. I don't know how much anybody would be able to make that sound better because it just has a beeper channel, but
right,
they're still trying. We've got two more honorable mentions for the PET to go before we're going to be done talking about it. They're both by Jim Orlando as well. This one's called PET Tower Defense, and it's a tower defense game, kind of think Plants vs. Zombies or something, but made on the PET and actually runs pretty well, which is surprising because there's a lot of towers that you can put down, and that means a lot of enemies that those towers are hitting. So there's just a lot of movement on the screen, and it does a pretty good job of keeping it nice and fast-paced.
And then the last one we have is Escape from Petsky Castle, also by Jim Orlando. It came out in 2024. And it's a Wolfenstein 3D-inspired FPS game on the PET, which is pretty sweet. And I forgot to mention this in my Petsky Portal review, but I think Jim Orlando also made a lot of these games at like game jams, which is, you know, where you're given like, I don't know, 12 hours, 8 hours or something to make a game as fast as you can. So I think that's why not all of them, you know, Portal had 10 levels, because that's just kind of what he could do in that time. But still very impressive to see all these games on the PET.
Yeah, and I want to, you know, emphasize, like, we wrap up piece of hardware all the time, and I always check to see if anybody has made homebrews whenever we kind of close out a chapter on a piece of hardware, and it's very rare for a piece of hardware to have this many homebrews on it, dating all the way back to just 10 months ago, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, people have gravitated to the PET, probably nostalgic reasons, I'm guessing. Maybe they grew up with it or whatever, but it's just held on all these years later. So it's really cool to see. And in a way that other piece of hardware don't. So
yeah,
it's cool. But let's say goodbye to the Commodore PET for the last time and move on to some other computer games, starting with my first review of the day, Wes. And man, this one really surprised me. I think what happened is when I was doing my research, I saw the Atari 8-bit version of this game first. I thought, well, that's pretty good. I'll put it on the timeline maybe in February because we don't have a month release date for this. And I probably looked up and saw, oh, it's also out in the Commodore 64. And I just kind of wrote that down and left it there.
Right.
But man, I checked out the Commodore 64 version now, and it's quite a bit better than the Atari 8-bit. Feels like it could have easily come out, you know, towards the end of the year, but we don't have a month date. And I had put it here, so we're gonna do it as is. But man, this one turned out to be pretty good. It's called Forbidden Forest, and it came out or was published by Cosme, the company Cosme. There's actually a bit of a kind of funny backstory to this game. Apparently, the designer of it, this guy named Paul Norman, he actually was just working for apparently a small company named Syncro, which was basically just a software store selling a bunch of computer parts. And that store actually kind of closed down, and the company Cosme came in to actually buy some computer parts and pieces of furniture and stuff as that company was closing. And they saw Paul like coding his game in the back corner and immediately hired him on the spot because they thought it was so good. So I just think that's a cool story. But yeah, Forbidden Forest came out sometime in 1983. For the Atari 8-bit and the Commodore 64, but I'll be pretty much exclusively talking about the Commodore 64 version because it's pretty much just better in every way. The general premise of the game is that you're an archer and you're trying to slay some monsters, ending with the Demigorgon, which is the final boss of the game. It kind of has a couple different waves. It starts out with spiders and then goes wasps and then frogs, worms, but spelled like a demon type worm, I guess.
Or like a dragon or yeah.
Yeah, it's like WYRMS. It does look more like a dragon, I guess. You got phantoms, snakes, and skeletons. So some kind of demon stuff here, but your character kind of looks like a little bit of a Robin Hood type character. He has a bow and arrow, like I said, and you're kind of moving around in this forest. The forest itself has parallax scrolling. But it's kind of weird, like your character is always like in the bottom middle of the screen. So when you move like to the right, like the whole screen scrolls to the right and your character stays in the middle. So you can never like move him to a different place on the screen. Like the whole screen moves when he moves. And it's pretty rare for you to want to move anyway. Like I found it was pretty easy to stay in the same spot and shoot everything that comes to you. But maybe for some of the other types, like I didn't get very far in the game, so maybe for some of the other levels you have to move more. But as you go through these levels, there's also a day night cycle, so it slowly turns to nighttime. There's even a moon in the background that has some kind of like orbit that goes as you get through the levels. The final level, when you're versing the Demigorgon, it's like completely blackout and you can only see the boss character when like lightning flashes in the background, which is super cool. There's also some interesting things that happen like that I feel like I haven't really seen before, where it feels like some of the enemies are like behind the terrain or like they're on like the second level of the parallax scrolling, if that kind of makes sense. It makes them feel like they're kind of far away or like beyond a hill or something. Like you can't see all their whole body. Maybe like there's a snakey verse, you only see his head pop up. And it's because the rest of it's like hidden behind a hill. It's very cool. I feel like I don't see that too much. But the main goal of the game is just to shoot and kill everything, like all the enemies for each wave. You do that, like I mentioned, with a bow and arrow. It is a little bit more complicated to fire than just hit a fire button. You actually have to load the arrow after you fire. So you have to like hit the fire button twice, kind of. And there's like a little bit of a delay. So as soon as you fire an arrow, you want to make sure you start to reload the next one right away. And then there's like maybe 8 directions that you can shoot from, but they're kind of like in a cone in front of you. So you can't shoot directly sideways. You can't turn around or anything like that. So it's a little bit limited in terms of your firing angles, but generally it wasn't too big of a deal. The enemies in the game are pretty large. Usually if you can just kind of point in the general direction, it's good. And, you know, it's not too hard to aim it and fire. That's the main goal of the game. So let me get into my ratings and I'll talk a little bit more about why it's so good. Let's start out. I'm going to leave the hypest one for the end. So let's start out with the graphics, maybe. I gave the graphics a 3.75 out of 10. I think they're pretty darn good. I mean, you've got parallax scrolling, a day-night cycle, lots of different enemies, and I think the enemies are pretty well detailed. Lots of like multicolored sprites. There's so many like little details. Like I said, the lightning is pretty cool. There's a different death animation for every character that kills you, which is crazy.
Oh, wow.
I also read that this is one of the first games to use animated blood, which needs a citation for sure. Like, I don't know. I think that might be true. Can't really think of other ones that have done it, but I bet you somebody else has done it before this.
Yeah, but I feel like someone has, but same. I can't name it.
In any case, it definitely adds to the kind of dark, mysterious atmosphere of the game whenever, like, a spider gets you and then there's a bunch of blood. So I think it looks pretty good. There's a decent amount of detail on the ground. Like, the trees might be have a bit of dithering to them. They'll have, like, different color leaves, like red, yellow, and green. So, I don't know. I think maybe your archer character is one of the weakest because he doesn't really have a face. Like, it's just, like, a, I guess, like, the back of a head. So, there's, like, this is nothing there. You know, like, he's wearing a blue cap, but then it's just, like, no eyes, no mouth. You know what I mean? So, he kind of just looks like a, I don't know, like a stick man, I guess. But he looks fine, but wasn't my favorite part. Some of the monsters are really cool. The snake character is cool. The phantoms and skeletons are really cool. The Demogorgon is a little weird. He kind of looks like a cockroach, but he's pretty cool still. Yeah, just kind of like everything about it. So I think it looks really good. I gave it a 3.75 for the graphics. For the gameplay, I gave that a 3.5 out of 10. I liked it a lot. But it was really hard. I never passed stage one when I was playing. I think two main things with that. One is that sometimes the enemies would come from the corner, like the lower corner, and my character could not turn and fire at it. Like, you kind of fire in this cone in front of you, and it's they're coming from like your right side or left side, and you can't turn and hit them. So I think you're supposed to just run away and try to get a better angle. But I had a hard time with that. It felt like I tried to turn and shoot them and my guy stopped turning and then I died, you know? So that was one issue I had a lot. You do have a couple lives, so that's not too bad. But I don't know. I felt like there were other times I tried to judge the distance and I don't know. The path my arrow didn't always go exactly where I was hoping it would go. So my main issue with it is difficulty. I think it is a pretty fun game. Lots of skill to be had. Lots of different levels, different types of enemies, different mechanics with those enemies. Like, they don't all attack you the same way. So I didn't want to hurt it too badly. I gave it a 3.5 out of 10. I think it still looks like a really fun time. And if I had more time, maybe I'd go back and try to get even better at it. But that leaves, Wes, the main thing that I liked about this game the most, and that is the sound effects.
Wow.
Which to me are on a completely different level from like anything I've ever heard on a home computer. It's exactly the type of music that I like. It's very metal-y, you know, but in a chiptune type way. So it's very Castlevania-y to me, very gothic. It's three-part harmony that plays the entire time. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. There are some times where the music stops and it's a little bit quiet, but for the most part, it's playing a lot. There's multiple different tunes. There's like a death song, like a song when you start the game or get to the next level. And other than the music, there's just simple firing noises that do sound pretty spacey considering you're firing arrows. But overall, it was a pleasure to listen to. And I you know, it makes me want to go make a cover of it. Like, it was nice. That good. So I really liked it. I think it's up there with some of my favorite music I've ever heard in a game from our podcast. So I went really high and I gave it a 4.5 out of 10 because that's how much I like it. Yeah. But of course it's exactly the type of music that I like. So
right.
That helps. But yeah, so it's a really good sounding game. It makes the whole game just have so much more character to it. I don't know. It just makes the whole thing feel more evil. Like you're going up against the Demogorgon and that's like a big deal. So yeah, I liked it. There was even like, I don't know, I feel like there's some sequences where it's almost like a boss entrance, you know what I mean? Where it's like you see the boss, he kind of spawned in, but you get that flash of lightning, and then that's it, and then the music's pumping. I don't know, it just makes the whole game have a different vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like it a lot. And that's something the Atari 8-bit did not do a good job at, but on the Commodore 64, it's great. Irrelevance, it sold pretty well. I don't think it's like one of the biggest Commodore 64 games of all time or anything like that, but it did get some good reviews. I ended up going 7 out of 10. To me, this is like probably a seminal computer game, one that I'll be thinking about for a long time, but I don't think it influenced that much, to be honest. So it's still by a pretty small company, and the Commodore 64 is just like a sea of games at this point, so I don't know how much it was really able to stick out from the crowd. So I gave it a 7 out of 10 for relevance. That overall leaves me with a 4 out of 10, by far probably my highest ranking for any computer game we've ever done. Yeah. But the sound, yeah, you're going to play some Castlevania music for me? That's going to make a big difference. So that's usually something that hurts all the scores of all these games. But then also to have like cool mechanics, cool enemies, and parallax scrolling, day-night cycle. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds awesome, man. It's just such a unique type of like shooting gallery kind of game. Like, it's totally different. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to hear the music and the gameplay like held up to how cool it looks when we were initially checking it out.
Yeah, man.
All right, but let's keep moving. We've got some arcade games to talk about now. First, we're going to talk about Bristles by Exidy, which was for the Maxiflex system, which was sort of like a Decocassette type arcade cabinet. In this game, you paint a house while platforming. Pretty standard stuff, though, compared to stuff we've seen before.
And then next up, we've got Car Jamboree by Amori. This came out in February of 1983, which is where we are. It's a bumper cars type game, but I felt it played pretty slowly, so we decided to skip this one.
And then we have Cavelon, or Cavelon, I'm not sure, by Jetsoft. It was a weird Pac-Man sort of game that had shooting in it. Sounds like it could be cool, but this one didn't look too great, just good enough we wanted to mention it. But then that takes me to my second review for the day. I'm talking about Super Glob, aka The Glob, by Eagles Corp.
That sounds like it could be an old horror movie, The Glob.
It does. Well, I think there is The Blob, right? So.
Oh, true.
So yeah, it fits right in. Actually, you know what? No, it's pretty cute. So I was going to say, I don't know if it's referencing anything or not, but either way, it's The Glob. The cabinet for The Glob is pretty cute, but also somewhat disturbing. The blue glob that you play as is chasing after like a bunch of random animals and has like a weird looking smile going on. The cabinet itself is pretty...
What does he want with them?
I think to consume all living life is kind of what's going on here. That's what The Glob does. The cabinet itself is pretty plain overall, but I do like the glob's design, and the colors on the cabinet had nice, some like bright red on it. The flyer refers to the enemies as the mob, which feels like it might be one of the first times that enemies are called mobs in some sort of way. You know, I don't know if there's any connection there, but it repeatedly refers to all the different enemies as like the mob and to beat the mob and to avoid the mob. And I'm like, that's interesting because it's just a bunch of different animals. Honestly, it's probably just because it rhymes with glob. So you're like, you know, it's glob versus the mob. But either way, I thought I'd give it a little bit of a shout out there. Getting into the gameplay of Super Glob, it's a Pac-Man type game in a way, but also like this elevator platforming game, if that's even a genre. it's not quite platforming because you can't jump or anything. You just move left to right, and then you use elevators to move up and down to the different platforms. As the glob, you have to navigate 24 different unique levels while collecting all of the food available on each level and avoiding the mob. And the mob are a bunch of different animals. There's a gator, a porker, which is a pig, a monkey, a rabbit, and Froggy. It's hard to tell in the sprite, but I'm pretty sure Froggy has a tie. So it feels very much like the Frogger flyer, where he has a tie in a briefcase, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's got to be a reference. Either that or it's just the frog's tongue and it looks really weird because it is red. But either way, those are the different enemies that you're going up against. And the main sort of gameplay twist in Super Glob is that you have an energy meter that slowly counts down as the round goes on, sort of like a timer. But you can use some of that energy meter to stick to the ceiling instead of walking along the ground. And when you stick on the ceiling, if you drop onto enemies, you kill them. Otherwise, if they run into you, they kill you. This gives you points and also temporarily despawns them. So definitely worth it to try and drop on top of the enemies when you can, and feels very Dungeons and Dragons. I feel like that's usually how like slimes attack people, or gelatinous cubes, you know, they fall from above. I don't know. There also are elevators, though, that are spread throughout the levels that you and the mobs can use. You actually have to press a call button right next to the elevator shaft to get it to come down to you, and then you can hop on it and move it up to your desired floor. You can kind of move like one floor at a time, or you can hold the button and go all the way up. You also die if the elevator lands on you as it's like coming up or down the elevator shaft, but you could also kill enemies that way by running into them with the elevator if they happen to be in the way, which is nice. And that's basically it. You're moving around on these platforms, collecting fruit, avoiding the enemies while riding elevators and occasionally dropping down on top of enemies to kill them. It's an interesting type of game. It's Pac-Man-ish in like the collecting aspect, but it's really its own mash of different games. So let me get into my ratings now. For graphics, I gave this a 3 out of 10. The graphics for Super Glob are decent, definitely lacking in a few areas, which I'm going to cover first. The layouts for the levels are a bit bland. It's just like some white walls with a black background, but they do get more interesting patterns like these blue hash mark walls and these big blocks of like green and stuff and other colors as it progresses. So I like that, but it still felt a little blank for all of the levels. And the elevators are just green rectangles. They don't really have much detail to them, and they move up and down on blue tracks for the elevator shaft. But they work well enough visually that you know what they are, and they aren't hard to see or anything. The enemy mob sprites are probably one of my favorite parts. They are a bit strange. They have some janky movement animations for sure, but they're all multicolored and have a fair amount of detail to them. The alligator has like a yellow stomach and kind of some lines that indicate some scales. The frog, like I said, looks like the flyer art for Frogger, which is pretty fun. And the monkey and the bunny and all that kind of stuff. The rabbit look pretty good too. And I appreciate that the elevator call buttons change color when you press them. So that's pretty interesting. But my favorite part is definitely your character, the glob. He is this cute blue glob with big eyes that kind of looks like a Pac-Man ghost. He's just like this nice dark blue that stands out with these big white eyes. And I really love his moving animation. It's probably my favorite thing about this game is that he like jumps to the side and his body bends into an arc, almost like Kirby or something. So it really feels like he's made out of jelly. I just love that because he easily could have just like slid around, but this makes it feel like, yes, I am controlling a glob of something, which is great. I also like that when you hit the call button, the glob's head, instead of being rounded, like becomes a triangle and the top of it just like taps the button. He's got like little stretchy capabilities, I guess. It looks pretty funny. He has this sort of idle pulsing animation too that just adds a bunch of good movement to him. And it's funny when he's upside down on the ceiling too. So I love the glob. The fruit is also pretty good, just like Miss Pac-Man. Or, well, I thought they were all fruit, but the third level is giant hams. So the food in general is decent looking too that you pick up. So it was pretty good, but altogether there were some elements that just pulled it down a bit, and that's why I left it at a 3. Moving up the sounds now, I unfortunately could not give this higher than a 2 out of 10. The sounds are not great at all in this game, considering it's an arcade game. the music is this really short loop that doesn't even sound like that great of a song. It just keeps looping and looping and looping, and definitely way shorter than it should be. Everything else is just beeps, and they all sound okay. Like, none of them were crazy annoying or anything, but it was just enough not good stuff together that it started to bother me by the end of playing it. So I just wish the music was a little bit better. There was a little more layers, like harmony, something other than beeps, maybe like squishy noises for the glob, but unfortunately none of that. Moving on to gameplay, though, I gave this a 2.75 out of 10. Superglob is a pretty good concept, but it just feels like there isn't that much going on, really. The elevators are okay, picking up fruit is fun, but you're just moving around these levels and dodging enemies and then riding up elevators. The layout of the levels just didn't seem that interesting either, and I kind of wish you actually did have to like jump over gaps or something to add a little bit more to this. But my main complaint with the gameplay is that the enemy AI is just really annoying. Instead of chasing you down constantly, they get close to you, and as soon as you go onto the ceiling to try and jump on top of them, they immediately back away. So you're always stuck in this like back and forth where if you don't time it exactly right, they just run away from you and you miss them. But they can also turn on a dime, so if you miss them, they will instantly turn back around, run into you, and kill you. So that just led to a lot of frustrating close misses for me. Especially, I think by like the third level, the game starts moving a decent bit faster and it keeps picking up pace. And I just don't know how you're supposed to land on top of the enemies. It feels like you're just supposed to avoid them at that point, which sucks because landing on top of the enemies and killing them was my favorite part of the game. So I feel like they just kind of deprive the one, they don't give you enough of what like the main unique element of this game is. It makes it too hard to land on top of things and sit on the roof or the ceiling. I will give it that the levels get more complicated, though, as you get through them. So I could see that being more fun. And I like the core gameplay of jumping on the ceiling and dropping on top of stuff and riding the elevators is decent. I just wish they, I don't know, tweaked the AI a bit to let you win a little bit more at the very beginning, because it just felt frustrating after you get to like the third level or something. Moving on to relevance, though, I gave this a 6.5 out of 10. It seems like a fairly unknown game, but I did want to give it a little bit of credit just in case. This is the first use of mob to describe enemies. And also jumping on the ceiling is pretty novel. I'm not sure it's a mechanic we'll see very often, but it's cool to see that in our history of video games. And so overall, I gave this a 2.75 out of 10 as well. So Superglob finishes with the same score as Petsky Portal, which is saying something for how good Petsky Portal is, I think. But the graphics are definitely carrying the rating here for Superglob. The glob itself just looks awesome, and I love its movement animation as well as all the enemies on screen. I'd like the concept and the character. I just wish the game itself was a little bit better executed. So it's not a bad game, just, I don't know, didn't bring everything together the way I hoped it would.
All right, that's fair enough. I do fall in love with the glob.
It's pretty good, yeah. I mean, maybe he'll get a sequel with a better gameplay or something.
Yeah. All right, we did have one clone for it. It's called The Glob by Magic Electronics. But then we're going to move straight into my second review and the last review of the day. It's one that I was looking forward to a lot because it's just really weird. And a lot of times we like really weird stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This one's called Skater by Data East. It's their Deco Cassette number 30. So somehow they've done 30 of these. And they've all been like very unique. But we've mentioned in the past that they're starting to show their age a little bit, and this one might be along those lines.
Okay.
So, Skater, I thought maybe for a second it was like skateboarding, but it's actually like more roller skating type thing. So, you play as a clown with like roller skates on, and why sure. You're playing as a clown, I don't know. But the clown, he's very weird looking. You only ever see like kind of the back of him, although he does turn his head from time to time. It's like a pretty small body and then massive legs, just like twice the size of his body. Like, and they're kind of like square legs too, like that he's bow-legged, you know what I mean? And your main goal of the game is to skate and have things go between your legs. Like, you get points by like kind of skating and widening your legs to go and kind of skate over certain obstacles, right? If you could do that, you get points. And that's the main purpose of the game. It's very weird concept, very weird execution too. How it kind of plays is that when you start the game, you kind of skate normally. Your legs are pretty close together, right? And you're just kind of going straight down the screen. You do have a button for speeding up and slowing down. And I actually found speeding up was pretty helpful because at first, at least, when I was trying to go over stuff, I couldn't keep my legs spaced out long enough to go like over everything. So speeding up helped with that. And what I mean by that is you have a main button in the game, and its main purpose is to like spread your legs open so you can like skate over wider obstacles, if that makes sense. And I really had a difficult time playing it at first because when you hit the button to like spread your legs, in my mind, it makes sense to like have that be like a, you know, my legs are spread as long as I'm pushing the button down. And then if I lift up the button, he'll be like skinny legs again. But actually how it works is when you press the button, his legs will spread out for a second, then automatically close again, even if you can't button held down. This confused me a lot because there's certain obstacles like I couldn't go through them by pressing the button once, I'll say. And it took me until I was watching somebody else play that the main strategy of the game is to like spam the leg spread button, and that'll keep his legs open. So the game plays like a bit of a button spammy type game, which can be fun. You know, it can be fun to play a game where you're just like whacking that button really fast a lot. I don't know, it felt a little bit weird to me for this one. It felt like I was purposely like somehow the game mechanic was like, be really janky, you know, like that's what they were going for. I don't know, that's a great mechanic. But yeah, that's mainly how you play. It's definitely a risk reward type game. I think you can go through a level and never really try to skate over any obstacles and just try to get to the end. And you're not going to get any points doing that, but is one way you could play for a while. In reality, it's pretty hard to do it because the screen gets pretty stacked with just like stuff. So even if you didn't want to go over any obstacles, there's not really a path where you could just stay on the grass, you know, like you're going to have to go over some stuff sometimes. So you better be prepared to spread your legs.
Not a phrase that I ever thought I'd hear you say, Ben.
That's how this clown rolls, man. Escape. I didn't make the game, okay? I'm just a reporter. But yeah, so there are some enemies that straight up kill you. It's kind of weird, the damage system in this game. If you try to skate over the obstacles, but you accidentally hit one of your roller skates on the obstacles, you take like a point of damage. And you have, I think, like 10 points of damage that you can take before you die. So it's pretty forgiving. Although there are definitely times when there's like 10 obstacles in front of you and you could hit them like four times before you like leave that obstacle. But I still think it's pretty forgiving, but there are some enemies in the game. They're usually like animals or mobile objects that are moving on the screen rather than being static. But if they touch you at all, it's an instant death. So you know, 10 points of damage, just instant death, which is a lot more annoying. You still do get 3 or 4 lives, which is pretty generous. But it's just kind of annoying to get instant deaths when there is this mechanic of like partial damage already in the game. Also, if you touch the sides of the screen at any point, it's an instant death, which I don't think should be the case. But how it worked for me, I got through the first level very easily multiple times, but then died very quickly on the second level every time. So it really ramps up the difficulty. But I was, you know, kind of getting used to it, so I'm sure I could do better if I kept trying. But yeah, I don't know. I think that's kind of everything you need to know. There is a power-up in the game, the golden boots. And when your guy gets them, he starts stomping. And when that happens, you're just invulnerable. So you can just touch any of the obstacles, I guess. It's like a Pac-Man power pill. But that's kind of everything. I did see in the... I forget where I saw it. It was either in a forum or on the flyer, but even though you are a clown and you're roller skating over stuff, the things you're roller skating over are like buses and buildings, like things that would make it seem like you're a giant. But I actually read in a flyer or on a forum somewhere that these are actually like toys you're skating over, like toy buses and toy buildings. So that's how they get away with that. Maybe it makes sense because like the animals that attack you are like small dogs, but it's still, the whole thing's just super weird. I mean, there's parts where, you know, if this were real life, you'd be doing the splits like 9 feet across. You're like, this is not possible, but I don't know. That's how the game is. So let me get into my ratings. This is one that, for how weird it is, I was very excited about it. And then the more I got into play it, the more it just kind of wasn't for me. I'll start off with the gameplay. I just gave that a 3 out of 10. That's right. I liked Forbidden Forest a lot better, even in gameplay. But I don't know. It just wasn't that fun, I don't think. Like, I felt it was pretty hard to judge going over things with your skates because it's from like a, I guess it's like a somewhat isometric view, but like imagine something's coming towards you. In like a platforming game, you would kind of jump before like it touches your character and then jump over. But in this game, you're skating over it and you have to like spread your legs by pressing a button. And oftentimes that meant that the object that you have to skate over passes through the top part of your player character. And it's only when it gets towards your feet that you spread your legs. So it was, it kind of felt like if I had to play a platformer, but you have to take 2 steps off the ledge before you hit the jump button. Like, it was just kind of off.
Right.
And didn't feel the best. Well, that's like the core gameplay. So it's, I don't know. That was kind of odd. And I don't know. The game just didn't really grab me theming wise, or like the speed wasn't really that fun or interesting. There wasn't that much like really moving. I was trying to dodge. It was more like a dodging type game, I guess, instead of like a, I don't know, like an action-packed shooter where you're kind of like reacting to what the enemies are doing. It felt more like a racing game or something, and I don't know, but without any speed. So I just thought it was kind of boring and slow, and just wasn't a lot going on. So I didn't have too much fun with it. I still gave it a 3 out of 10 because it's not bad, but it's just not the best. For graphics, I gave that a 3.25 out of 10. Don't really know what to put here because it's so weird. The screen is like mostly green. There are some trees and the enemies, and like the movable enemies, like the dog, look really good, I think. But then your character is so weird. You're like staring at his butt the whole time. It's not the best. The things that you're skating over just don't make any sense. They're houses and buses. I guess they're supposed to be toys, but they don't look like toys. I don't know. Nothing really like makes sense. So it just kind of looks like a fever dream and doesn't really come together for me. So just gave it a 3.25. The clown is more horrifying than he is like cute or something. So that didn't help. And then the sound effects, again, very weird. You've got this music track underneath of it that is pretty good and decent. And it feels like it's been mixed to be a little bit quieter, you know, in the game over the sound effects. But I feel like it should have been the other way around because the sound effects in the game are constant and really high-pitched beeps that get really annoying really quickly. So I don't know. I feel like I'm sitting there, I'm trying to listen to the music, and all I'm hearing is just like beep, 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 beep all the time. And the music's really quiet. So I couldn't really enjoy it. I also don't know. It feels like in the later levels that the music is really fast. And part of me makes me wonder if, like, you know, for like level 2, did they have the music like double in speed? Because that's what it sounds like. Like it gets like almost unintelligible at times. The music wasn't very good either. So yeah, didn't really like the sounds in this game. Again, Forbidden Forest was like peak, you know. This is not good. So I gave it a 3 out of 10 for the sounds. It's okay. There's music, but I thought it was a little annoying and not my favorite music. Thank you. fans. Unfortunately, I couldn't really find much in way of this game at all online. Sometimes for the Deco Cassette games, they make individual cabinets of that game as well. That's not part of Deco Cassette. It's just like a separated cabinet. And I don't think they did that with Skater. I think it only ever came out on the Deco Cassette. That means there's no real flyer for it. There's no like arcade cabinet that has Skater theming. So it's just kind of been lost to time, and I just gave it a 3 out of 10 for relevance. Lots of 3s on this one. My overall score is a 3 out of 10. It's okay, but probably should have came out last year, and just it's weird, but not in a good way this time. I don't know. It just didn't really work, didn't really hit. So, yeah, a bit of a letdown for Skater, but that's okay. I had a really good one earlier in this episode, so everything evens out.
Yeah, exactly. It's a shame because it did look like it had the potential to be one of those games that's just so weird. We love it. But yeah, sounds like the gameplay didn't quite deliver well, and some of the other departments.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it for us today. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. We finished the Commodore PET forever. Unless Jim Orlando makes another game in 2025, that's right. Just incredible. But I don't think so. But Wes, you took a look at Petsky Portal, which is a 2D Portal game. I actually read that it was made based off of a 2D Portal Flash game that had come out before.
Oh.
But of course, that was inspired by Portal, so it's all connected. Right. But then I did Forbidden Forest by Cosme, which turned out to be phenomenal. Up there with the best games I've played this year, whether arcade or computer. Like, it's just that good, so super happy about that one. Then you did Super Glob, otherwise known as The Glob, by Epos Corp, where you played as The Glob going up and down elevators.
Yeah.
And then I did Skater, which is a game where you play as a clown and have to skate over objects by spreading your legs. So that was a pretty weird one. But definitely one you guys should check out. Look up a video of it. Hey, that's the kind of game I'm interested in checking out, even if this one wasn't too good.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get with these episodes, you know, because we love covering as much stuff as we can, all the weird stuff. If you all enjoy that too, make sure to keep following us, keep listening here. Check out our website where we've got tons of great information, including our 1983 research. Also, make sure to follow us on X, where we post announcements about our episodes. And if you have any questions, be sure to send us an email.
And with that, we'll catch you next time.
See you all next time.